presenter in this, during this panel. Does trends and individual differences in the performing solo Bach, a case study of Heifetz and Milstein. This is the presenter is Dorothea Fabian. This should be quite interesting since both of these musicians were considered titans in the 20th century and both studied with the same teacher, Leschetizky. But in many ways, I'm thinking, yet in many ways, in my experience, they could be very close and very opposite in the sense of their interpretation and their technique and the approach to the same piece of music. Dorothea was originally from Hungary. She lectures in the Department of Musicology at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. She has done research publications including a book on Bach performance practice and the early music movement between 1945 and 1975. I know a friend who knows her, and I asked her about that. Goes on the known tour of the Laughing Cavalier, and they do know each other. That's why I asked her about that, because it kind of struck me that he is very interested in the same type of, the same topic. And she has written papers on violinist, music perception, and aesthetic response to recorded performances. And we'll be rolling here in just a second. I think you'll find this a most fascinating lecture.
We just ready? We just wait a little because I'm still setting up.
Well, at least we got sound. We know that.
So it's setting down.
Okay, yes, it had
to. Huh? I know all you Mac guys are sitting there going, yeah, Windows waiting for it. Cancel.
Press delete and start.
Start delete. Control alt delete a few times.
Yeah, true.
What's that old saying? The air is human. To really screw up, you need a computer.
Not quite yet.
Not quite, okay.
But, I have to find my file.
I can't do anything about that. Come up here. Help me with it, Mike. All righty.
Maybe I put it in again and then it. I was told to use the facilities, so I'm obeying my instructions. So hopefully it will work. Now I'm sure it will.
Alrighty.
Well, okay. Great.
It is all yours.
Well, thank you very much. And I would like to thank you for your support. I would like to also acknowledge my collaborators on this project, in particular Eitan Ornoy, who is a professional violinist in Israel, and he has provided me some very important observations for this project, and I also would like to thank my research assistants who labored over some of the measurements that I had to do for this project. Basically, as you have heard from the chair, I have a broad interest in Bach performance practice as documented on sound recordings in the 20th century, and gradually I have moved into the violin repertoire to the extent that I've started learning to play the violin at the age of almost 50. Good luck to me. But it's a lot of fun. Relatively recently, I have finished a study which was an overview of the solo Bach sonatas and partitas performance history on sound recordings, and that was published in 2005. And on the basis of this study, I started to question the emphasis performance scholars put on trends. And I thought that actually individual difference would make most of these trends pale And I think what we have heard already is that even Schnabel, in certain movements, he sounds older than in other movements. And it's therefore very, very difficult to even talk about the individual characteristics of a performer, let alone the trend of a particular era. But the solo sonatas have been recorded a lot of times, and certain trends obviously fit what Robert Philip and others have established. But I do think that individual difference would need a lot of attention from now on. So my purpose here really is to look at individual difference in violin playing, and in particular the solo Bach, because then we don't have to deal with what the pianist brings to the ensemble. And for today I have selected Milstein and Heifetz because they met several criteria that I thought were very important for my research purposes. They basically represent the same generation, and I will show you some details in a moment. As we heard, they had the same teacher. They come from the same cultural background, both Jewish Russian violinists, both emigrating to the United States. And they also, very importantly, recorded the pieces several times, so I don't rely on a single version. I will contrast them to some of their contemporaries and also to the overall data that I have. So just a little bit of detail, just to remind you, because I'm sure they are well-known artists and you probably know their biography more or less. Anyway, Jascha Heifetz was born in 1901. And died in 87, was a student of Auer from the age of 9. Previously, his father was his teacher, and he came to the US very early on and took up citizenship already in 1925. He only recorded the complete set once in the 50s, 1952, but he also recorded some of the other pieces, in particular the G minor sonata and the D minor partita in the mid-30s. In comparison, Nathan Milstein was just 2 years younger, 1903, but he was not a native of the St. Petersburg area, but was coming from the south, from Odessa, where he started violin with Stoliarski, who is a very famous violin teacher in the Odessa region, and joined our school only at the age of 12. And he spent much more time in Europe before he moved to the US, although he was there for more than 10 years before he took up citizenship in 42. Nathan Milstein had a very long life and made many recordings and recorded the complete sets twice in the 50s, just a few years away from Heifetz's recording, which is very important for my investigation, and then again in the 70s. For comparison's sake, I will also mention a live concert of the D minor partita from the 50s. Now, the comparison violinists, just to kind of contextualize the individuality of Milstein and Heifetz at the time, the comparison violinists are Josef Szigeti, who is older and represents the kind of Central European violin playing, Hungarian by birth and a pupil of Hubai, but mostly lived in Berlin and London, and again ended up in the US, as most people do, and also took out citizenship and recorded a complete set in 1955, but there are several other recordings of certain sonatas, in particular the A minor sonata from the 30s and 40s. Now, George Enescu is mostly known as a composer, but he was a brilliant pianist and also quite a well-known violinist and also a teacher of violin with a very important studio, kind of whoever that didn't want to study with Karl Flesch in Berlin went to Enescu in Paris. And Menuhin, in particular, was one of his famous students. So I thought Enescu and Szigeti were kind of contemporaries, slightly older than Heifetz and Milstein, and in a particular important link to the next generation, which would be represented by Menuhin, who recorded the piece twice in the 30s and then in the 50s. And some of the performance features that I analyze and I will report on today include obviously phrasing and bowing, fingering, the use of open strings, vibrato and portamento, and then tempo, rhythm, and general overall approach. I'm not sure I will be able to cover everything, but these are the issues that I'm looking at. Now, just to give you a summary at the beginning of the talk, because these are, I think, the most important summaries that I am quite confident and happy to make. Others are more tentative observations and depends on the movement, depends on the section, and lots of qualifiers are needed. But what we can definitely say is that high fats makes great differences between first play and repeat. Milstein plays more or less the same way twice. High fat seems to be using a greater dynamic range, especially because in the repeats he sort of puts additional expression on. He also uses a lot more portamenti, as those of you who know his playing would probably know without even studying. Definitely many, many more portamenti than anybody else at the time. Generally tends to be using the extremes of tempi, dynamics, and everything else, gestures, whereas Milstein is much more sober, and the violin playing is much more clean, the tone is much more modern sounding because the vibrato is very narrow, hardly any portamenti, and generally little difference. He seems to be a very constant violinist who plays at the same way most of the time. Now we can listen to some of this to illustrate. First, I will have a couple of examples of the A minor sonata the third movement, the Andante movement. And you can see that on above the score we have the first play fingering, and below the score we have the repeat fingering, and you can see that Heifetz changes the fingering so that he can accommodate portamenti that he wants to add in repeats in particular. There are also other reasons probably for the changing fingering, but it seems that he's very confidently playing the piece in different ways to create different effects. Generally, his style is very legato and broadly phrased. So the first time, the second time, a lot of dynamic fluctuations as well. If we compare it with Milstein's 1954 recording, then we find that he also uses relatively longer surges, but the bowing is a little bit more articulated. Subphrases of 2-4 notes under the slur can be heard, and the dynamic range again is a little bit wider in the repeats. But generally, there is not much difference between the first play and the second play. The D in the second last row is circled because it's an interesting point to compare who plays it as a flageolet and who plays it as a stopped note. Both Heifetz and Milstein play it as flageolet, and Szigeti as well, whereas Enescu and Menuhin play it stopped and vibrato. But I'm not going to illustrate that. I lost my mouse. Here it is. So, first time. A much longer phrase through the dynamics rather than on the slower level. And repeat. move to 1975, before you get too bored with the same example, there will be other examples as well, but we can see a slightly faster tempo, a Martale bowing, detached notes under the one bow, but the fingering is still similar to the earlier recording, and again identical in both the first play and the repeat. There are no portamenti, the D is played as a flageolet, so very little actually changed, except for there is a bigger sort of forward motion in the recording. I play it only in its repeat format. Quite hard to, apart from the tempo, there is very little difference between the two recordings. Now, if you look at bowing in a fast movement, then I can illustrate this kind of more slapdash or haphazard attitude of Heifetz and the sort of cleaner, more steady attitude of Milstein. But first of all, I would like to show you a recording of Szigeti from 1939 of the fast final movement of the A minor sonata. And we can hear how he uses a spiccato bowing, very kind of rough, sautillé, staccato, throws the bow off the string, and results in quite a lot of squeaks and unfocused airy tone. We'll hear the beginning of the movement, and then later on, a couple of bars later on. A virtuoso, and he tends to play very fast when there is the opportunity. Now, Heifetz uses a similar bowing technique, also bouncing the bow off the strings, but closer to the frog, which creates a slightly cleaner tone quality. He also plays even more staccato in the repeat. So I will play you the first three bars, and then the repeat of the first three bars, and then the later on section in its repeat form. Now, if you look at Milstein, then we get a classic détaché style, very clean sound, no change for the repeat, just the terraz dynamics from forte to piano, but no change in the bowing like we had in Heifetz. And the 55 and 75 recordings are very similar. The 75 recording, we can just compare the first three bars, first time and repeat. The difference between the earlier and the later recording is more in recording technology than in the violin playing, but I'm sure you could tell me more about that side of things than than I do. Now, we can move on to look at rhythm. In Baroque performance practice, rhythm always becomes an issue, and especially the performance of dotted rhythms. Lots of people wrote about it and went into fight over whether you should overdot or not. A particular case that is often debated is the performance of dotted rhythms when the dotted rhythms alternate with triplets. And a very good case in point is the D minor partita's corrente movement, which has just that, lots of triplets and then dotted rhythms. And when one listens to the recordings, then one hears that Heifetz's dotting is not very sharp. It's actually almost just a long short kind of contrasting ratio. Whereas Milstein's dotting is much more dotted and sounds definitely overdotting. I don't trust my oral perception in these matters because I've done another study which very clearly shows that there is an illusion when you listen to dotted rhythms, and tempo and articulation will cheat you. You will hear it more dotted if it's played faster, even if the dotting ratio is exactly the same. And also if it's played more staccato, you will hear it as more dotted. So I thought, okay, this is what I hear, but what actually happens, I better check it out. And what I did, I measured note onsets, and out of note onsets I could calculate dotting ratios, and I graphed that measured dotting ratio against a theoretical dotting ratio that, given the duration of the beat, that would be the exact dotting ratio that you would require theoretically. And what you can see in Milstein's recording is, which is the blue line. The blue line is generally outside the pink line, and the pink line is the theoretical dotting. And if it is outside, it shows that it's over-dotted. And I also show in the second graph that it's not quite theoretical double dotting, which I think is really just a theoretical thing. I have measured quite a lot of performances on dotted rhythms, and I never find double dotting. Over dotting is very common, but double dotting is not very common. And the most dotted of his three performances of this movement is the 1955 version. So this is what I will show you. He also plays rather staccato, which creates that dotting effect even further. Now, if you compare it with Heifetz, then he doesn't even play dotted rhythms. He really plays a 2-1 ratio, long-short ratio, as if triplets. And again, this is graphed by the same method that I measured note onsets, calculated dotting ratios, and then graphed it against the theoretical 2-1 ratio. And you can see it on the top graph that the 2-1 ratio and Heifetz's measured note onsets basically match over each other, whereas the theoretical dotting and his delivered dotting doesn't match. The blue lines are constantly within the pink lines, and we can listen to maybe this recording, the 1952 recording, and the repeat, because then you will hear his many portamenti as well. Also makes a lot of agogic accents and stresses certain notes, so the whole thing is very articulated and also very much in the triplet framework rather than dotting against triplets. Now, just very briefly, we can compare what happens to Dotting in the recordings of these other violinists. And it kind of shows the consistency in approach. The Milstein recordings are overdotted, the Heifetz recordings are underdotted. We also see that Enescu plays underdotted, so we might say it might be a trend because Adolf Busch from 1929 also underdots. So we might say that the earlier generation underdots, and the next generation from Menuhin onwards, and by the 50s it's common to overdot, except in Heifetz's case. It's difficult. You can interpret the graphs in all sorts of ways depending on what argument you want to make. But interestingly, Milstein's 1975 recording is a slightly more literal dotting. If I average it out throughout the entire movement, then it's sort of close to literal dotting. It might show this kind of urtext mentality that was so typical in the 70s, play the notes and they will speak for themselves. Now, the tempo choices is the next issue that I would like to very briefly summarize. Generally speaking, people would say that we tend to be faster and faster in our tempo choices. And there are a couple of scholars who provide data after data after data that it is not the case. And yet other scholars just say, the early music movement, all they do, they play faster. But it's just not true. Maybe the oral perception or the sort of anecdotal impression makes you think that we play faster. In fact, early performers played much faster than late 20th century performers. But again, it's difficult to generalize because it depends what we are talking about. Sometimes slow movements might be faster today, but fast movements might be slower today. And again, it depends. Basically, what I try to do here is to take all my recordings of these solos and look at each decade and whether there was any particular trend. I didn't find any trend because every movement resulted in some different overall data. Some movements showed great diversity in the 50s and hardly any diversity in the 80s. Other movements showed the exact opposite. Standard deviation shows also how common the tempo is in a particular decade. And for instance, in these two graphs, you can see that we are looking at Adagio, the G minor sonata Adagio movement. And in the 70s and 80s, the standard deviation is the highest. So in fact, they choose all sorts of tempos in the 70s and 80s, whereas in the 50s, they tend to choose the same more or less same tempo and a slower tempo. But if we look at the Andante, which is another slow movement, then again the 80s seem to be very varied and the 50s less so. If we move to faster movements, now this is the Sarabande and the Courante, again the data is just so diverse that I think any generalization is really an inappropriate thing to do. And again, it just shows that looking at the individuals is probably more meaningful than trying to generalize trends. Here, this is just looking at my chosen violinists in the D minor partita, and you can see that they choose a varied tempo in the 50s and in the 70s across all the movements. There is no particular trend. What is important in terms of Heifetz and Milstein that they tend to be in the average rather than outlying. Their standard deviation number is very low, so they play the average kind of tempo rather than extreme. Perhaps more interesting is to look at something in more detail, and this is just tempo flexibility rather than overall tempo choice. And tempo flexibility is very important when we are looking for individual differences. The morning session on the Mazurka project showed that even just looking at tempo flexibility, we could identify hoax recordings and fakes. Now, what is interesting in this particular illustration is that Heifetz and Milstein have a very different strategy to their phrasing. The green lines are Heifetz's is two recordings from 35 and 52, and the orange lines are Milstein's two recordings from 55 and 75. And the tempo, this is a bar level tempo flexibility, and it shows that different bars accelerate in Heifetz's recording, and different bars are faster in Milstein's recording. So for instance, bar 17, 18 for Milstein is a faster moment in the piece, whereas for Heifetz, the bar 11 and bar 20 are the fastest movement. We might just listen to a little bit. This is the second half of the D minor Sarabanda, and I don't have a score, but we can just hear the two recordings. If I was showing you a beat level tempo fluctuation, then we would see more details, but then the graph would be too hectic. And Milstein. I stop it here because we run out of time. But we could hear the very different approach. Now, this is just looking at Heifetz himself, comparing his two recordings from 35 and 52, and just a couple of bars from the beginning or the first phrase of the Sarabanda. And you can see how steady his approach. His aesthetic conception of the piece really doesn't change much. There are slight tempo differences, but the overall structuring of where to accelerate and how to shape the music on the phrase level is very similar. And now we can move on to portamento and vibrato very briefly. I have already mentioned several times how often Heifetz uses portamento. Portamento was very common until the 1920s, probably, and gradually faded out. And usually people would say that Auer was very much against portamento, and he writes about it in his book, but in fact his students are very different. Heifetz uses a lot, others less so, and therefore I think one would have to be very careful about this teacher-pupil relationship as well. Milstein hardly ever uses any portamento. Szigeti quite freely, Enescu and Menuhin not at all. Now, spectrogram images can help you visualize portamento and also study portamento in more detail. I don't have time to go into that today, but most of the research I have seen on portamento simply talks about the frequency of it. And I think that's a limitation, because fair enough, we can all hear a performance using more or less. But what makes a portamento is the expressive content of it, because there's quite a lot of sort of technical slides, and you have to decide whether you want to count it as a portamento or a technical slide. What makes the difference is really the speed of the portamento and the the loudness of it. And generally, the loudness of the sliding itself, or the middle note between the two that the slide covers. And when you visualize portamento, then you can measure those things, and at least you can also visualize the difference, the strength of the signal and the length of the portamento. And you might even be able to tell whether what type of portamento the violinist is using, which fingering it uses, which violin schools talk about the different ways of executing a portamento. But here, this is just a brief kind of illustration, and what I want to show here with the spectrogram images is that in the first play, Heifetz doesn't use portamento. It's exactly the same moment in music, those nine notes that are on the score, and the first time he doesn't use portamento, and in the repeat he does, and we only listen to this 1934. Okay, and now, I assume that most of you have seen spectrograms, but it basically visualizes what the ear hears. So you have a time axis and a frequency axis, and I try to sort of match the notes with the onsets on the spectrogram. And I circle the portamento. It's not very easy to see, perhaps, but you have a cross sign there. Now, vibrato is similarly something that we can quantify. We can obviously hear a lot of things, but we can also quantify. And the two main issues is the rate of the vibrato, how fast or how slow, and the width of the vibrato, how shallow or how wide. Now, comparing these violinists, I found that the rate of the vibrato was relatively stable and normal. They say that six and a half cycles per second gives you just a nice kind of timbre that a vibrato sound creates. If you go faster than that, then you get a sort of a tremulous sound, and if you go slower, then it gets wobbly and generally out of pitch as well. Szigeti's vibrato tends to be a bit slower, especially as he ages, but the others have a fairly standard and fairly well-regulated vibrato rate. Now, vibrato width shows greater differences. Heifetz tends to be a little bit wide, almost half a semitone wide, whereas Milstein is very narrow, especially in the 50s, but even in old age. And Szigeti is very wide and often out of tune. Now we can see another spectrogram image, and going back to the A minor andante, we can also see some bowing and some other issues here very briefly. This is a moment when you have double stopping. You have a melody line and you also have double stopping. And very interesting how Heifetz vibrato basically stops for the double stop note, the D. When he has to play the D again under the held C, then the vibrato stops and we get a straighter signal. But it also shows the very legato style, because all the repeat take of the C is really, there is no interruption in the signal, just a dynamic increase, because the signal becomes louder. I play you the repeat. Okay, so the bowing is very legato and very continuous. We can compare it with Milstein's, and we see that his vibrato is very well regulated, very even, no difference between double stop or single note. The double stop note is also vibrato, and the vibrato is nevertheless very narrow. And we can listen to that briefly. In 75, he's a bit more articulated. Okay, you can, and the third circle, you can see a little bit of a gap in the signal as well. That also shows that he retakes the bow. Now, these examples from the D minor Sarabanda just show Milstein's narrow vibrato. You can see quite a lot of open strings. Whenever it's possible, he uses open strings, which is a very gives his playing a kind of historically informed sound quality. Whenever he uses vibrato, it's very narrow. Often it's more the intensity that fluctuates rather than the frequency. You can see the signal becomes yellower when it's louder and fades when it's softer. Very straight sound. Just one example here. Okay. And just a bit of vibrato on the last long note. Here in 55, and that was the live recording, and now the 55 and 75 studio recordings show the same. The only difference between the two recordings is that in the 55 version, we have the long note start straight and only then vibrato. And here, especially in the repeat, you can see how it starts straight and then the vibrato is very narrow. This is the actual played pitch and the others are harmonics. Whereas in 75, you can see that the long note starts straight away vibrato. But generally, the vibrato is still very narrow. We might compare these. You could hear it was straight and then vibrato, and here. Immediately vibrato. Okay. And I'm basically almost done. So here is just a couple of summary observations, but as I said at the beginning, and as I kind of showed you with the examples, it's very difficult to sort of come up with hard observations because everything really depends on context. But we can say that Heifetz plays perhaps a little bit with more free expression, especially in repeats. He tends to slide a lot and also use a lot of portamenti, especially in 35. Heifetz has a slightly more flexible approach, especially in slow movements that can create an almost ornamental effect. Milstein is more metrical and more sort of score correct. On the other hand, Milstein uses a lot of open strings, and that creates a kind of different sound, and his clean pitching and bowing also creates a very modern sound. The vibrato is very different. Heifetz is wide and fast, and Milstein is very narrow and often using open strings instead. And interestingly, Heifetz and Szigeti show more similarities because they use subito piano effects and they do melodic climaxing, and Milstein, on the other hand, just kind of uses terrace dynamics and much more reserved and much less flexible. So in some ways, Heifetz is more historically informed in its flexibility and ornamental approach, whereas Milstein is more historically informed in its tone production and its articulation and things like that. Very interestingly, and this is really just an aside, it seems that Szigeti is using Flesch's edition, which was very popular in the first half of the second of the 20th century. But interestingly, in his own estate, I didn't find the Flesch score. I've seen three other scores, three other editions with his pencil marks, not the Flesch score. But every single dynamic indication in the Flesch score Szigeti produces. So that's something that I still want to learn more about. So in conclusion, in relation to the sort of the big question, I think when a particular era, in this case the 1950s, is examined in detail, then individual difference seems to be outweigh any possible notion of period trends. Vibrato, portamento, bowing, phrasing, all were different in these violinists. And if we keep reporting averages that create a trend, then we are basically just creating a problem. And similarly important when we look at an artist's subsequent stages in his life, then we find that similarities often outweigh any potential change because of periods. Not all performances like that. Leonhard changed his style considerably, and somebody else showed an example of that as well. But by and large, it seems to me that the technique, an interpreter's technique, often direct the interpretative choices, and that technique stays with them throughout their life. And artistic temperament is also much more important than a period trend or the teacher's potential influence. And just to link back to the first speakers, I find this kind of comment of the wretched performer who is too liberal and doing all sorts of things with the rhythm and the tempo, complains about these wretched performers back in 1748, 1765, and at the same time they praise the performer who is not just playing the notes but is free and adding and whatever. It's a constant issue since we have records of performances. There are people who like it straight and there are people who like it flexed. And I think that's the beauty of performance. And thanks for sound recordings for us to enjoy it all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothea. Any questions?
Just one minor point. I believe the UNESCO recording is more like from 1950 than 1940.
Well, the CD that was reissued by this Italian radio, whatever.
Classica d'Oro?
No, it's Ibis or something. Oh, I have to look up the label, but it's the Italian Radio Broadcasting National Sound Archive, something like that. They say 1940 with question mark.
Oh, Instituto Disco.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
No, those were actually done, I think, as late as maybe 52.
Maybe.
Yeah,
because
they
were
added on magnetic tape cut on LPs.
Uh-huh, that was
right.
Custom. That was
earlier
custom.
Than 1950.
Excellent.
Right. Right. Those were custom pressed by Columbia.
Uh huh. Thank you for that. I will correct my database.
Yeah.
Yes, Andy. First of all, I wanted to thank you very much for the presentation and the fresh look that you offer.
Thank you.
To simply state that regardless of any other parameters, nobody played like hyphens.
Somebody had to say that. I vouch for Mirstein, I'm sorry.
What is portamento?
Portamento is when you slide from one note to another. It's really as a vocal device when you report porta da voce. Is the Italian word where you sort of keep the voice up and you sort of lift it up, and on violin you just kind of slide.
You know, I've thought for years, going back to the earlier presentation, that the pianistic version of that was the broken chord.
Yes. Very much so, probably. Yeah.
I would also like to add that Haydn's practically never used it. Almost all of his slides were expressive slides. And expressive slides in his use are fundamentally different in their effect than portamento, as we think of it as a style of string playing that was more of a product of the late 19th and early 20th century, at least as it survives on record. He had a unique approach to shifts and slides, and that's one of the reasons that he remains inimitable.
And can you say what the uniqueness consists of?
They're expressive, he uses duration, intensity, mm-hmm. and changes vibrato, all in the course of making these little shifts.
Thank you. We're running a little late. Please be back.
Thank you.